Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Chris. This episode's going to be from this past Rhino X, a great session, awesome session, where it was Ken Goodridge versus Jake Gress. Who's Jake Gress? Jake is the current day operator of Gettle, and Ken interviews Jake, and Jake interviews Ken. And this was quite enjoyable, so we thought, let's turn this into a podcast episode. So enjoy this episode with my man, KG and JG.
This is To The Point, a Rhino Experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
So we're gonna have a conversation today. Jake is the new CEO of Gettle, been here for the last 3.5 years. And so we're just going to have a conversation. I'll tell you a little bit about Gettle, and I'll tell you a little bit about, you know, the journey we took. And then I want to talk about Jake and how he's approached the next phase of growth of Gettle. And it's very interesting to me. I was thinking about this on the way here this morning. Gettle has a long, rich history. It's 89 years old this year. The founders, Gus and Adam Gettle, they invented the residential air conditioner. They've patented the first residential air conditioner. They first created the assembly line for the evaporative cooler. They made Phoenix, Arizona habitable, first with the evaporative coolers. Then they built a packaged unit for residential use, the first unit, and they started to put refrigerated air conditioning on air conditioners here. First in Phoenix, and then throughout the Southwest. As a matter of fact, the History Channel has a whole story about the birth of Phoenix, Arizona, and the impact Gettle air conditioning made on it to make it habitable and have refrigerated air conditioning and make a place where people can live. So it's deep with history. And including that history, it's been a very large company over the years from time to time. In the 70s, if you guys know Contracting Business Magazine, back then in the 70s, they chose Gettle Air Conditioning as the largest HVAC contractor in the country. And these guys were very ahead of their time. But I was the sixth CEO of Gettle, and now Jake is the seventh CEO of Gettle. So it's kind of an institution here in the HVAC industry. And I happened to pick it up in 2013, days away from bankruptcy. Bought it for $500,000. So I made a couple bucks along the way in my exit. But going to the backstory of this was, when I was a kid, 10 years old, my dad asked me to hold the flashlight for him. He was an AC tech. He was working on an air conditioner. And the first air conditioner I ever lit up with my flashlight was a Gettle, because they used to manufacture air conditioners. And this was in Las Vegas. And over the years, my dad became a Gettle dealer. And, we would repair, install, sell new Gettles in Las Vegas my whole career up until they stopped manufacturing. I think it was 2009. But so Gettle's been, I've been around this whole business for 50 plus years, one way or the other. And, I got the opportunity to get my arms around it and take it to the next phase of growth. And now Jake has the opportunity to do the next thing.
It's going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun, though.
So just kind of give everybody a little idea of your background and how you got here.
Yeah, so I'm not from home services. I actually started early in my career in consumer products, so a lot of brand marketing, advertising, new product development, that type of stuff. I worked for companies like Newell Rubbermaid, Sunbeam, and then I kind of fell into a little bit of the trades and working for the largest drywall manufacturer, USG. And then that led to many years in drywall distribution, working for a company called L&W Supply. And we scaled that business from roughly about $1 billion to $4 billion over 6 years. There's a lot of similarities and a lot of parallels, actually, to this business, because you got branches out in the field. You're trying to figure out what you want to put in the branch, what are the common processes, what's your operating structure or systems going to be, and then you got a lot of back office stuff that you got to get figured out and kind of understand where you're going to put some of that accountability, where you're going to put some of the controls and the decision rights within the business.
So here we are, we're moving along with this journey. I've been a student of the industry my whole career. I watch. I think I listen a lot more than I talk. I watch all of you operate, what you do. I study different business models and such. And it's very interesting to me to watch Jake and how he's approached this business. He comes in the end of 22, kind of gets his feet wet, gets his arms around things. And then he gets punched in the face, early 23.
Yeah, we get to see the top of the mountain and then just, start going down the backside a little bit.
Yeah, so he gets punched in the face a bit. But I will say, and we'll talk more about how his approach was, because it's interesting to me and I think it'll be interesting to you, how to approach a difficult situation in business. But through all the challenges that have come up with supply chain and the 23 wall, we'll call it hitting the wall, and the increased competition, more sophisticated than I've ever seen in my career, the poaching of people, the payola that goes on now with technicians and salespeople and this and that, just making everything much more difficult. He walks into this day one, right? So how was it?
It was rough. What I would tell you guys, this is a complex business. So even though there's a lot of parallels from some of the other industries or jobs that I've been in, there's a lot of complexity. And I think it was well said earlier today where, it is a simple business, but a lot of it is the execution, because you're trying to execute through people at the end of the day. And you're trying to figure out the systems and processes that can support those people in the right way so that they can be effective in their jobs. And so there was a lot of just spending time in the field, doing ride-alongs, trying to really understand the space. The difference really between something like drywall or drywall distribution, you're selling contractors at the end of the day. And those contractors have big jobs, and there's annuities, basically. You win work, and that work, you may ship a giant tower 100 times over a year, and so you've got a certain amount of business already on the board for the year, whereas this business, you walk in the office every day, and sometimes the board is zero, and you're trying to get those jobs on the board. So just a lot more of a dynamic business and trying to get everything running effectively. And then I would say the other thing is there's a lot of places where you can leak. And I think Tony and Alan talked about it really well. There's just a lot of places and all these handoffs. I liken it to like a 100-person relay race on every job, every day, with all these handoffs that have to happen perfectly. And you don't want to lose the job. You don't want to not close on something. You don't want to treat a customer the wrong way. And so it's a lot to kind of take in and really try to understand. But I would say more than anything coming into the industry, I was blown away how much everybody shares. Like events like this in a lot of other industries and spaces just don't happen. And so I think it's a rather unique trait within this industry of just how people are willing to share, have debates with folks, really share mistakes as well as share successes. And it's a really special thing that you guys should take full advantage of, because it just doesn't happen in a lot of other industries.
When Jake showed up, I remember having this conversation when I said, hey, listen, here's the way I see it. What got us to here ain't gonna get us to there, right? We knew that we had pushed this business to the wheels almost came off, to get to this exit. And, it needed some, the foundation needed some fortifying to make it ready for the next
phase. He told
me
just tighten it up a little bit.
Yeah. And so, he went to work on it. But I'm curious to how did you tell me what how you looked at it, and how did you pick, okay, here's my spots. I'm going to focus on these several things to get the foundation solid to take us to the next level of growth.
I think the first thing is I just took the first 90 days and I just observed. I just tried to listen. I just tried to ask questions. I tried to be as curious as possible. I was trying to figure out what we were really good at, right? And then I was trying to figure out where are the blind spots. Where are the areas that we've really got to pay attention to? And a lot of my focus went to the operation side. Like Gettle is a very good communication company, has very good sales process. We've continued to innovate on the closing, being a phone close and our call by call and how we operate all those things. So that wasn't something that I had to really worry about. Really, I started looking at the operation side and where were the leaks? Where were the ways that we were losing money? And the hardest thing, I think, is if you don't have that Service Titan set up just right, and then for us, you know, at the time we had you know, well over 11 branches. Were they set up consistently, branch to branch, with the same configurations? Who could change a configuration? Who could change a process? Because sometimes people are trying to do the right thing, but in essence, they changed the KPI, right? And then how you were measuring things just kind of fell apart. And so we actually sat down with Ara and literally just said to Service Titan, like, what are we doing wrong, right? Because Service Titan's designed a certain way. Are we trying to be too cute or too bespoke with how we want to use Service Titan versus just using it the way it was built so that we could get the most out of it? And I think that was a big unlock, right? Because once we could get the data really consistent, that helped us really understand where we were and where those leaks were. And I would say the other thing, you know, you supported this, but I'm like, we need a data lake. You know, and I didn't think that a contractor firm would need a data lake per se, right? It was something we had in distribution, it was something we had in manufacturing, but it was a big unlock for us because a lot of the data's in Service Titan, you just couldn't get to certain metrics. Even measuring on time is not something that's super easy within Service Titan, but I wanted to know how on time are we on the first out? Because if we're on time on the first out, the rest of the day is gonna go way smoother. And I saw cancellations happening, but often happening at the end of the day. And it was just that we were starting our day too late, and we had to get earlier to that first job. And then, you know, our big feeling was that that is better service, right? Customers don't like sitting around or waiting, right? They want to know. And if they know, that's just going to help condition the customer a lot better to be more relaxed as we go into the home.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like Service Titan, House Call Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
So getting to know the people, getting to know the functions, getting to know the tech stack, really trying to understand how well we executed some of our processes. We had some really good tribal things that we did, but we had to get it documented so that we could teach it more often. And that was a big piece of just getting the team to get things on paper so that we could coach and teach it more often.
And I'll say this. Gettle is in more solid foundation than it's ever been since I was involved in it when I was 10 years old. Like, you know, he really has got the thing solid and everything firing on all cylinders to take the next leap. And it's very interesting. I love watching this situation. You know, when he first showed up, I said, you know, I go, listen, here's something that's been bothering me. Like, how the fuck, how the heck do we have a 60% margin on replacement sales and, you know, 80% margin on service work, and we put 55% gross margin on our P&L? Where is it? Where to find this fucking money? Find this gosh darn money. And you know, my team, we didn't have the infrastructure, we didn't have the bandwidth to really start digging into that. And he comes and he goes, well, I think it's the price book's messed up. I think the price book needs to be completely redone, and I think we need to lower some prices. Where's Gaynor? There he is back there chatting. But yeah, so he wanted to lower the price. I'm like, this is completely counterintuitive what I've ever always done, right? But they went to work on it, and he was able to actually lower the prices and increase the gross profit margin and gross profit dollars by fixing the system, make everything much more efficient, really drilling into the things that, you know, I didn't know or I couldn't get to or I ignored because I was trying to drive the business up into the right too much, probably.
Yeah, I mean, look, sales hide sends, right? And as any good operator, there are times that you actually will drive sales because you know you can't necessarily collect it on the bottom side. But when you have the time and the energy, right, you want to make sure that your three-legged stool is strong, right? And for me, that three-legged stool is really your sales, right, and your sales process, but it's also your operations and it's your technical aptitude, right, your craftsmanship. Like if any leg on that stool is shorter or longer, that stool falls over. And so we had an incredible sales culture, but we didn't have a culture around technical or around the operations side that kind of matched it, but we also didn't have the data. So the operators couldn't see it. They didn't know it was there. And a lot of what we've tried to do is create the dashboards and the visualizations for these guys to be able to see the insight so they can drive the action, drive the change in behavior down to the individual. So a lot of the things that Tommy shared with you guys, we've got very similar dashboard scorecards down to a technician so that we can really understand where are their blind spots? Where can we work with the individual and continue to train them, coach them, and make them the best them?
You know, we were kind of sharing some questions back and forth about what we'd be talking about today, and he made, I don't know the exact question, but it was basically like, you know, what's it like to sell your baby after so much certain amount of time, something like that, right?
Yeah, to give up the baby, right? Yeah. You were CEO for a long time.
Yeah. Well, you know, this Gettle was my sixth business I built and sold, but interesting enough, when I think about that question was, every single time I kind of went through the same, the five stages of grief, right? The first time I ever sold, Leland and I sold businesses about the same time in 97, I think. And we worked together back then. But I'll never forget, you know, I get my statement, my Dean Witter statement, right? My bank account, right? And I look at it, I'm seeing this big number in there, and I'm thinking, I felt better about myself when I had $0 and I was sweating payroll, but it was mine, and it was my creation, and I was working on. And then every single time I went through that little period of time, little bit of blues, then I had to talk myself out of it because usually I had some rollover investment in it or I had an earnout or something like, well, I better get out of the funk because, you know, I got, you know, like in this particular case, I got 50 million reasons why I need to stay on top of this and lend everybody a hand to try to help it get through. So, but it is interesting that the psychological things that go on when you sell a business that you've devoted so much time and energy to, you know, it becomes part of your identity. And I would say for anybody here, you know, as you're thinking about building a business to sell, just be careful with that. Don't let it be too much of your identity. You know, it's something that you own. It's something that you're building. It's something that serves a purpose in your life, but it's not your life, right?
Well, but at the same time, like, you are Gettle, right? I mean, that story rings true as far as what our brand is and what we represent. And I think that's the huge connection that you have is that it means something in your heart, right? And people feel that. Our associates feel that from Ken.
Yeah. Well, I felt like when Gettle was on the on the bricks, I thought it kind of it was my destiny because I'd already done some deals. I just got out of a deal with ARS, sold three businesses there, and I'm like, maybe I'll just kind of.
Attention to the point, listeners. Branding has never been more important. Is your brand in serious need of an upgrade? Do you have a new company and need a new brand but don't want to wait 6 months or pay a ridiculous amount to get it done? If your brand looks like everyone else's, well, guess what? You are everyone else. But Prolific, they build brands that dominate from the first Google search to the driveway. Prolific brand design can help you be more of you because you are the unique difference that sets you apart from all your competitors. So let's be real for a second. Your brand is either winning you customers or costing you money. Just ask some of our clients like Ken Goodrich, Ishmael Valdez, my boy Chad Peterman, and even myself. Prolific Brand Design is the creative pros behind some of the best home services logos, truck wraps, websites, and now email marketing campaigns. Wouldn't you love it if your email marketing open rates were 30, 40, 50% and don't go into the spam folder hell? That's how we roll at Prolific. So check them out at prolificbranddesign.com and ask for the To The Point promo, Prolific Brand Design. Be more of you. Be prolific.
Sail off into the sunset, and then Gettle came available. I'm like, this is my destiny. I have to do this one just because, you know, first air conditioner I ever lit up with a flashlight, right? So you come into this environment, though. Was there any challenges, you know, with that? With, you know, you got this big personality and attached to the brand?
Well, I think, look, you're an innovator, you're a thinker, right? You're super curious about a lot of things. And then the brand was very much you, right? Like literally the boy on the truck is a visual of you in essence. And so, you know, for the company, there's a lot of loyalty to Ken because that story resonates with almost every contractor, holding the flashlight for a father. It resonates with a lot of our customers. And that was one of the things that actually attracted me to Gettle and why I agreed to come was I believed in the brand, and I saw that there were some systems and processes that were in place. We had a good footprint. We had some shared services, so there were things that we could kind of work with at the end of the day. But at the same time, I was trying to learn the business, and Ken was throwing more ideas at me than some days I could even take on because I was still trying to figure out what we were doing and then what were the right ideas for us to apply. And these conversations, like literally, we'd be sitting here with a glass of bourbon or rye and having them over dinner and literally just debate about the business and what should be prioritized and what should we do, right? And how should we fix certain things? And I think a lot of that dialogue brings out the best of both of us. You know, we agree a lot of times, but there's times we don't agree either on how to approach something or how to approach an individual. And certainly we've had to make some hard decisions on people as we kind of grew. And I think it was brought up earlier. You know, sometimes those individuals can't continue to change or can't continue to grow at the pace that we're trying to do within the company. You try to give them every chance to come around, but sometimes it doesn't work out. And those were hard.
You know, something I always want to ask you. So you came at it, you just looked at it from a different perspective, right? You know, I come at it from, I know every nut, bolt, and screw and an air conditioner and all the way through up. But you came in and looked at it as the business enterprise. But, you know, what experiences in your career, your past, got you to say, I need to put this in, I need to put that in? And most of it was the fundamentals of business, not trade-specific innovation on marketing or sales. It was building blocks of the business. I need the data. I need this. I need that. So how did you acquire those skills? Because this was, you know, a lot of it was new to me.
Yeah, I think I just got lucky in my career. I ended up in a lot of positions where a business was broke, and somehow I got assigned to the job. And the good news with a broke business is you can't mess it up anymore, right? So I just like to try things. I like to try to figure them out, right? Like it's like a little bit of a chess or Rubik's Cube. And so over the years, as you get exposed to bigger and bigger businesses, you were just exposed to a lot of other concepts. So whether that be inventory management, whether the price book, we had a lot of debates on because, you know, the price book in this business is really the heart and soul of the business. It's how you're going to basically estimate any margin that you're going to do. It's your script. And so it's really critical that that is like really tight within the business. But I think more than anything, it was just being in the right place in a lot of situations. And certainly the thing that probably shaped me the most was the journey we went on L&W Supply, where we grew that business just exponentially. And
To the Point listeners, listen up. What if the biggest thing holding back your business isn't marketing or hiring, but your bennies? The benefits for home service companies, a better 401k can be the difference between great techs and losing them to the shop right down the street. Basic Capital, our newest sponsor, is the only 401k built to actually put your team on a real path to retirement. Companies that switch over see higher participation, happier teams, and dramatically low turnover because your crew finally gets a plan that's a true benefit, not just a checkbox. Don't wait until your best people walk. Make the move and click the link below to get 12 months with zero employer fees when you join Basic Capital.
Look, 70, 80% of that was organic growth. So it was a focus on people. It was a focus on processes. We like to call it freedom in a framework. So what is going to be the framework that we're going to make sure everything is consistent? But you got to design for freedom, because ultimately the individuals in your business want to be entrepreneurs. They want to make decisions. They want to pull levers. And you need to design your systems around that. And I didn't know what was going to work within this space, and I still don't fully. But just trying to take those learnings and then keep an open mind. Like, even though I have opinions, I don't know everything, and I want to stay curious. I want to learn, like, what's important for this business, this industry, or even the timing of where we are in this industry at this time. And, you know, the crazy thing is, even in only the 3 years I've been here, the industry has changed dramatically. So question back to you, like, what, when you look back, and maybe just the last 5 to 8 years, how much of the business is still the same, and how much of the business is different?
I mean, I think the fundamental overall look of the business, the brand, you know, we're not leaning into the brand like we did at one time, but certainly the brand image is all still there. I just, you know, right now the business probably has more discipline, you know, more discipline than it's ever had, certainly more data. You know, I thought I had a lot of data. Like, you know, we were data guys when to the extent that I could do it at the time. But always kind of leading the charge with, you know, with our numbers, driving the business through the numbers. And there's a number of guys that have worked with me in the past here could probably attest to, you know, 20 years ago we did another project and we were really on top of the data. But then you and your team have taken it to a completely whole nother level that I just had not had any experience. So how did you get, where in your career did you get that experience to really be able to break it down to that level of granularity?
Yeah, I would just say, like, drywall distribution, although it's simple, right? You break bulk, you offer contractors credit, and you stock and scatter the job, right? That's it. But at the end of the day, you got heavy equipment.
You're spending thousands to make the phone ring. But if your CSRs aren't picking up or converting, you might as well light it on fire. And what are the largest businesses in the country doing about this? They use Avoka, the leading AI platform in the trades. $100 million businesses like H.L. Bowman are operating with only 9 CSRs because Avoka handles up to 80% of the calls. Plus, Avoka follows up with your leads, grades your CSR calls, and helps you strategize. So my suggestion, go with the leading company. Check out avoca.ai. That's AVOCA.AI. Click the link below.
CDL, you got crane operators, right? And in essence, we measured everything because we had limited capacity too, right? And the most valuable time in drywall was always that first out, right? So we tried to measure everything. You know, we measured everything from a price book standpoint. We measured everything from a customer just retention standpoint. And really we did all of that, but we tried to make sure that we drilled the data to the insight to the individual so that it empowered the individual. It helped them grow their business. It helped them make decisions. It helped them change behaviors versus just throwing massive spreadsheets at people, because that doesn't do any good, right? So it's the translation and getting that simplified, even though it may be complex on the backside, trying to get it really simplified for the individual so that they know what they need to do. They know what they need to change in order to improve the business. It's almost a gamification of the business.
So LNW/ABC Roofing, right? I don't imagine they had that level of data when the founder had it, right? It was kind of the same evolution. Somebody came in and put some, some new modern business techniques inside that business, which scaled it to a $4 billion business, right?
Oh, absolutely. And look, there's a lot of really bright people on the distribution side, especially in roofing and the drywall distribution side. So, like, as we deal with HVAC distributors, unfortunately, there's a lot of great people, but we're dealing with distributors that are almost 10, 15 years behind some of the other spaces in just how they think about service, how they think about technology, how they think about integrations, how they think about speed, or even AI to script a lot of things. So you have automation where you're not hand typing a lot of things in. We're just not there yet in this space. I think there's a couple players that might be able to get there at some point. But today it's still pretty fragmented. I mean, this is a really fragmented industry. Even though we've got a lot of big companies in here, there's a majority of this business that's still a lot of single location mom and pops. And even on the distribution side, there's still a lot of fragmentation across the distribution side.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, I mean, it depends who you ask on how big the industry is, but if you think a business like Frank's that just sold for $2.5 billion, it's more than likely less than 10% of the industry, right?
There's a lot of upside.
Yeah.
Right? There's still a lot of opportunity. And then there's, I think it's been said today, there's a lot of market share in all of your markets. There's a lot of opportunity for new customers that are out there. You just got to earn their business, right?
I'm sorry, 1%. It's 1%, right? 1% of the industry. Interesting. Yeah, I got to tell you, it's a different business. It started getting a little different, I would say, back in 17, 18. Get a little more competition, and, things started really picking up. Then we lived through the COVID thing. And then, some of the bigger sales happened in 21, early 22. But after that, the competition is a whole nother game. It's a man's game now, I'll tell you. I used to really enjoy it because, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, and I was a one-eyed man. But now it's a whole different game. You got to be sophisticated to play the game now, huh?
Yeah, I think a lot of the themes we've talked about today is, everything from knowing your business, knowing where your leakage is, being strategic about your marketing, how you estimate what you're going to spend, where you're going to spend it. There's just a level of sophistication that's happening. But there's also still individuals that spend a lot and don't measure it. That raises costs for all boats. And so if everybody's going to play checkers, we got to figure out how to play chess at the end of the day.
Right. And, I will say that, the team that I pulled together over the years, we had our tools and we had our methods and, we had our system. But a lot of it was done just on brute force. Like, we had a team, we're going to win, we're going to do whatever it takes to win. Now you've kind of refined the culture. Let's talk about that a bit. You've refined it, and tell me what's your definition of it now, and how did you make it go from the brute force to a more refined process?
Well, I think the biggest thing is this is a people business, right? It's been said a lot today. But ultimately, we've got to be a place that people want to work. And one of our simple goals is to be the best place to work in the industry. So engagement is key. We measure engagement. We use the Gallup Q12 for that. That we do that twice a year. We use those surveys to create and facilitate conversations with the team so we know what's working, what's not working, where do we need to change. But having that dialogue, having that servant leadership, right, where you're looking to help those individuals and grow those individuals, I think is really critical. People spend a lot of time at work. right? So you got a lot of choices out there of where you can work, but they want to feel like they belong. They want to feel like they're part of a team. And if we grow them and we develop them, you'll grow and develop your business at the end of the day. So we've put a lot of effort just into our talent, into training, whether that's skill set training at all levels, all roles, all titles, and then work really hard on the culture and making sure we kind of live up to some of our core values and pledges each and every day.
So looking on the horizon, what's the industry look like in 5 years?
Whew, that's a great question. I agree with Frank. I think there's going to be probably a lot more consolidation. I think the thing that's unknown is does AI lower the barrier to entry as far as being able to scale your business? Some businesses can't quite ever get over 1 million or 2 million. Some businesses can't get over 5 million. But with some of the automation and some of the things that are coming, does it allow those businesses to become 10, 15, right? I think that's going to be interesting to watch. Or does AI become this thing that kind of polarizes the industry and there's the bigs and the smalls? That's going to be kind of fun to watch to see how it plays out. I mean, ultimately, customers want to have choices, right? And customers want to feel good about their experience at the end of the day. And if we stay focused on the customer, you know, and again, use some of these technologies to support our people, empower our people, and help them deliver legendary service, we're going to be just fine.
Yeah. I will say, while the industry is, I would say it's in flux, and it's more challenging than I think that I've ever seen it, I still think that this is the greatest time for opportunity for, like, the Gen Ys, probably not Gen Zers, but, you know, the Gen Ys to really go out and build a fortune. One, you know, they're raised with tech, so that doesn't scare them at all. And they can implement the new toys out there to help it grow the business. And there's just a whole nother level that I hadn't seen before of these younger dudes who are really knocking out of the park. And who would ever think that $100 million HVAC company would be fairly common?
Yeah, I mean, I think the neat shift that I've even seen in the last 3-4 years is the trades are actually cool. I mean, my son is a general contractor, right? And he and a bunch of his other friends are contractors in construction. And, you know, the neat thing about the trades, the neat thing about construction is people need shelter, right? People need to have homes that are taken care of. And so that's not going to go away at the end of the day. And then we've seen it as far as the younger generation having more interest in the trades. Our latest version of our apprenticeship program, we had 1,500 resumes come through for 30 positions. So there's a lot of interest to be in this space. And that what's exciting is we get to pick the best ones. Right, we get to pick the individuals that have the right character, the right personality, the right attitude and effort, and I think that's going to be a game changer, because if we can train them from the ground up on a lot of the technology and a lot of the good practices that we want them to do, we're not trying to break habits, right? We're forging great muscle memory on how to run those calls, how to treat those customers, how to use the tools that we're providing for them.
Right. Going forward, what's your growth plan? Like, where are you going? Where do you want to be? How do you want to even this situation out?
Well, we're super focused on the Southwest. So we want to continue to expand in Nevada, Arizona, Texas. At the same time, we'd love some colder markets. You know, it's tough dealing with the seasonality, and Daryl can attest to this, of a desert market. It's feast or famine, right? And that's very difficult on your P&L. And so if we can get into colder markets, Utah, Idaho, Oklahoma, Colorado, but we'll be focused really on the Southwest as kind of our sweet spot.
Okay, so anybody have any questions? We've got 2 minutes. We were that captivating.
I'm missing my bourbon.
Yeah.
I need a bourbon.
Okay. Well.
All right, thank you guys.
All right, thanks guys.